Now, bands like the Blues Brothers, Nick Cave and the White Stripes have all covered the 1930s gospel song John the Revelator, originally recorded by Blind Billy Wilson. It's about the Christian story of John of Patmos, who wrote the Book of Revelation. John the Revelator is also the title of music writer Peter Murphy's first novel. Set in Ireland, the John of the story is John Devine. He has visions and lives in a closed world under the strict demand of his tough mother, but he eventually shakes off the shackles of this parochial setting when he meets the independent James Corboy. For the book show, Anna Hedigan read Peter Murphy's novel John the Revelator and says it fits into the Irish Gothic genre.
An Irishman walks into a bar and orders, "Oh, hang on, I'm not allowed to tell that joke." Lazy caricatures of national character are definitely not PC and a bit dull. Unless you can skewer cliché like a good New Yorker cartoon. John the Revelator is the first novel by Irish music writer Peter Murphy and a bildungsroman following the boyhood of John Devine, set in a small Irish town. Ever since Richard Scarry introduced me to Patrick Pig, who kissed the Blarney Stone and couldn't stop talking, I've had a soft spot for the blather and crack of Irish stereotypes, which is just as well, because this book is full of them. Strange boy who only talks to his mam, tough nut single mother, alcoholics, religious hallucinations, all present and accounted for. Perhaps I'm being ungenerous here. Plenty of genre fiction indulges familiar tropes as a framework for exploring ideas, almost as ballast to hold the reader fast while they find that new way to the old destination. This book does sit in a genre, bog gothic, a term playfully coined for the novels of Irish author Patrick McCabe, whose most well-known book, The Butcher Boy, looms large over Murphy's. They inhabit the same world, the rural town which hasn't changed much since the 50s and where there's naught to do for young people. The humour and savagery of McCabe's satires are clearly an influence on Murphy, but he's doing something else here, something more grounded. John is introverted, bright, and like the crows he dreams about, he often seems to observe what is going on keenly, but through the wrong end of a telescope. The most influential book of his childhood is Harper's Compendium of Bizarre Nature Facts, and his obsession with parasites and putrefaction leads his new and only friend, Jamie Corboy, to dub him Worm Boy. Before Jamie arrives in Kilcody with his cool clothes, vinyl collection and Rambo obsession, the novel promises stranger territory. The first part of the book details the fierce closeness of single mother and child in an enclosed world without other children and a palpable sense of dread. It put me in mind of similar relationships in Jeanette Winterson's novels. The rejection of the outer world sets up John and Lily to make a universe from each other, not necessarily a good thing when the lonely boy only has an alcoholic handyman and local busybody for other company. "A mother's word is gospel to her son," says John, and it's a singular catechism Lily teaches him, full of Old Testament fury and peculiar wisdom. Murphy has a great ear for dialogue, and like the compelling angles of their talk, John's narrative perspective is otherworldly, touched with strange visions like those of the apostle for whom he is named. Jamie Corboy and his influence on John takes the novel into town as Jamie introduces the shy narrator into the normal pleasures of adolescence. Jamie's also a writer, and his stories are thinly veiled records of the dirty doings of Kilcody. The boys are witness to the hypocrisy of the adult world, and as John becomes more confident in town, the strangeness of his mother and their life together become clearer to him and precipitates a kind of breakdown when drinking with Jamie one night. This breakdown marks a change in John's voice and his role in the story. Before, he is more like a scribe, a witness, an apostle writing his testament of what occurred, collecting his mother's myths and stories like an earnest field anthropologist. But Jamie is sent away to a boys' home after covering for John's indiscretions, and Lily sickens. Mrs. Nagel, the gossip and hand of judgment in the book, inveigles her way into the house to care for Lily and brings her judgments and small-mindedness, good works that choke John with expectations. John seems becalmed again, alone in strangeness, as he was in the beginning. But he finds his manhood in caring for his mother and rejecting the standards of Kilcody. His visions become more extreme, like St. John dying on Patmos, writing his final book. He changes the locks on Mrs. Nagel, repairs his relationship with Jamie, endures the pain of adult life. There are a few first book hiccups in John the Revelator, some thin writing of minor characters, and the crow dream sections I felt at times derailed the main story too much. Overall, though, its effects are hypnotic and accomplished. Murphy has made a world under the fairy hill that impresses with musical language and bold effects. There's a spaciousness to John's experience that recalled strongly for me the long, boring stretches of teenage reality when life seems impossibly opaque. The gap between what is happening and what is said to be happening is huge, insurmountable. Lily wills herself into illness, mental and physical, as she is no longer really needed by John, but the specifics of what causes her breakdown are missing. Nothing is revealed clearly to us or to him. Life can be cruel like that.
Anna Hedigan there, contemplating the cruelties of life in Peter Murphy's novel John the Revelator. It's published by Faber Fiction.